Well, hey there, folks, and welcome to Trapping Across America. My name is Chip Davis, and I will be sitting in with you this evening, guest hosting Trapper Radio tonight. This is all a little bit fast-paced and kind of maybe a little bit thrown together, sort of. I had a call today, this morning, from Clint, and he's just feeling a little bit under the weather. It's just this, spring, late, early summer, hot weather stuff, just kind of under the weather, and got a little cough and different things. So he called and says, "Hey, dude, can you catch a show tonight?" And I said, "Well, sure thing, I'll try." Got a really, really busy day, but had several kind of topics on my mind I wanted to talk to you guys about when I had a chance to, and so we're going to get started with it. Before we do, I just want to thank you right off the bat for allowing me to hang out with you. One of my favorite things to do when I get a chance to hang out with the trappers across North America and just sit down and talk trapping or whatever subject it may be for that evening. And I have a blast doing it. So I do appreciate you guys listening in, because without listeners, there would be no Trapper Radio at all. And I certainly... like usually when I host, I always like to give a shout out to Clint for doing this. We're nearing the 500 episode mark here, and not exactly sure what this one is, but we're, I think, somewhere, within a few months of hitting that 500. There's a lot of information there. I know I personally have learned a ton that's helped me in my trapping and even just, living life itself, and just a lot of really cool information on here. And so hats off to Clint for even creating this years and years ago, and for closing on this big milestone. I mean, that's 500 episodes probably equals in excess of 600 hours of information that we put out there for free. But it's not really and truly for free. Somebody's got to pay for the server cost, and somebody's got to keep up with the IT and all that has cost associated with it. You and me don't have to pay that, but the sponsors of Trapper Radio do. So let's cover those guys real quick, and in no particular order. But first up tonight is Funky Trap Tags, and out of Iowa. Alan's a good friend of mine. He runs that. They have just about everything you could possibly need for trapping or for hunting or for fishing. He's got all of Clint's lures in there. He carries our products with Expand-A-Pan and different things, but he's got just about everything you would need. He's also has a huge Amazon presence there. If that's more convenient for you, give Alan a shout over at Funky Trap Tags and Supplies. Great guy to deal with. Super, super fast shipping. You'll be very, very pleased with your service that you get from Alan. So if you've never tried him, check him out. It's about time to start looking at upping your supplies or refreshing your arsenal. The trapping season's just right around the corner here. The next sponsor on our list is Oki Cable and Trap Supply. I believe that Jeb was the original sponsor for Trapper Radio some years ago. And Jeb's a great guy to deal with, kind of a horse trader kind of guy. He's got just about anything you could possibly want. And if he doesn't have it, I bet you Jeb knows where to get it. So check Jeb out over at Oki Cable and Trap. Next is Dunlap Lures. Jeff Dunlap up out of Alpena, Michigan, I believe, or somewhere very, very close to there, is the death dealer himself, and great, great guy, superb trapper, extremely knowledgeable of what he does. He's been making trapping baits and lures for years. I think his dad, if I understand this, started that business back in the 70s. Jeff's been around his whole entire life. That's what he does. That's what he knows, and he's extremely good at it. I think one of his mottos is results matter, and you absolutely can see that in the results of his lures. I've trapped with Jeff on trap line a time or two, and I actually do use his product some myself. Great stuff, great guy. Neat thing about Jeff, he makes a ton of shows. I'm not sure there's anybody that makes more conventions and shows than Jeff does. And so you can look him up. He's I'm sure that he's got it on his website somewhere, his show schedule. If not, you can get in touch with him on Facebook. He also owns Trapping Talk on Facebook, and one of the largest social media trapping groups out there. So look him up, go see him at a show. He'd love to shake your hand and talk trapping. He's really, really cool. Last on the list tonight is F&T Fur Harvesters, F&T Trading Post and Fur Harvesters, I think is how they call it. And great company. It's kind of the Walmart of trapping almost. Extremely well laid out website. They got a catalog. They carry just about everything. They've got our products in there, Clint's products, Jeff's products. They're, you know, great company to deal with. Super, super fast shipping. Everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling, I think, is their motto. And so, great people to deal with. When the neat thing about F&T, when you call up there to place an order, you're going to be talking to a real trapper. You're not talking to somebody in China or some, you know, teenage secretary or phone bank somewhere. You're talking to somebody that sits still in the ground and is knowledgeable of what they do. If they don't have the right answer, they'll get you the right answer. But great people to deal with. You'll feel like you've known them forever once you start trading with them. Great people, F&T Fur Harvesters, and they are out of Michigan as well. They also have presence at several of the shows too. I know that they're planning on being at Nationals up in Lima, Ohio here in just a short few weeks. It won't be long at all till convention season is here. Well, like I said, Clint's out tonight, just feeling a little bit under the weather, but Clint also has a few things going on. I'm just going to mention a couple of them real quick. He's got a separate website. It's called howtotrapit.com. This is, many of you know, Clint made lots of VHS tapes way back in the day, he also switched over and made DVDs and, you know, later on. And now all that knowledge too is out there, and he sells those at shows. But he compiled all that. You can watch everything he's ever put out there on that form of media at howtotrapit.com. It's a subscription base, and I think you got, you know, maybe a year. I don't know. You can look at the details on it and see. But you have access to that content for a long, long time, and you can see everything that he's got going on. So make sure you check that out, howtotrapit.com. And the last thing, I'll plug Clint and Jeff from Dunlap Lures. They're having a school this fall, and I had actually reached out to Jeff, but he didn't quite text me back by the time I'm recording. So at any rate, I'm not sure the dates, but you can get with Jeff or Clint, either one, and you can find out the dates of their school. I think they've had some changes there. I think maybe the school is actually going to be in Michigan this year. I just heard briefly a little bit about where it's going to be. It's going to be real trap lines on real ground. And so I'm not exactly sure the dates. I'm not exactly sure how much availability is left. Those things fill up fast, and there's a good reason that they fill up fast, because you're learning from two of the best in the industry right now. And you're not just taking instruction from one, you're getting both of their knowledge. If you do sign up for one of these, this is what I would encourage you to do. Try to learn from both of them. Try to leave there with much, much more knowledge than you had. Be a sponge, and don't be afraid to ask questions. Both these guys are really, really good as far as their teaching and their method and their communication. So I would absolutely encourage you to take this opportunity. Very seldom do you have opportunities to learn from two at the same time of a couple of the best trappers in the country right now that are active in trapping, and that knowledge base is just absolutely full. So look those guys up. I'm sure on both Clint and Jeff's websites there's information about the school. There's a change of venue again to Michigan this year. It's going to be a great time and a great opportunity for you to learn. So with that, we're going to jump on over into the show. This may be a little bit shorter kind of show today, because it's kind of spur of the moment. Actually, this is Friday afternoon as I'm recording this, and it's going to go up immediately because I've got a busy day here as well. Lots of things going on in Mississippi. I've been gone, been traveling a lot this spring and been away, and We've got lots of things going on. Most importantly, I have my granddaughter's two-year-old birthday is tomorrow, and they're having it at my horse barn. So I've got to get busy and get this thing cleaned out so we can have a baby shark birthday party and horsey shark birthday party at my barn tomorrow. So that may be why we have to cut this close a little bit. But one topic I get lots of questions about, and I thought that I may just kind of address, I don't recall us specifically talking about this on Trapper Radio before, is trapping to protect wildlife a little bit, but more specifically, and we're going to get a little bit in the weeds on this, is trapping to protect wild turkeys. Many of you know that that I'm a very, very avid turkey hunter. I've chased turkeys all over the United States, literally in every state that you can hunt them in, and was able to fulfill that goal this year. Very, very proud of that. But it takes a lot. And so I'm not talking about traveling on this show. I'm not talking about different things. I'm in love with wild turkeys. I love to hear them gobble. I love to see them. I love to track them throughout their life cycles and all that. So, for instance, right now, this is the middle of June, I guess, and we have poults on the ground. Right now, I'm in excess of 40 poults from this year on less than 330 acres here. But I'm only just seeing, I don't have my cameras going to the back side of the place. I don't know what's back there, but confirm different flocks of turkeys, or different clutches, we call them. We've got over 40 baby poults here, and that doesn't just happen on its own. I mean, certain years are more conducive to hatches than others, but I want to talk a little bit about how trapping plays into turkey management and kind of the methods that I use as I trap for my turkey predators and how I control those and some things to be mindful of or cognizant of or look at or think about maybe as you're trying to protect turkeys and grow turkey populations, but you're doing that through nest predation and adult turkey predation and that sort of thing. So I don't have any notes at all. This is all straight off the top of my head because it was kind of a quick call. Hey Chip, can you cover the show? So that's what we're doing. I may ramble a little bit and I apologize ahead of time. Having said that, let's jump straight into this. What predators are, and here again, I'm not a biologist. I'm just a guy that loves to turkey hunt, but I've got some track record that we're raising a lot of turkeys here on this property, and there are a few things that I do. And so I think turkey management is a number of things, and we'll probably cover those. And to raise turkeys, I think you have to look at your most limiting factor and address that first. Then look at your next most limiting factor. Habitat's a factor. Nest predation is a factor. Adult turkey predation, critters, getting your adult turkeys even. We're going to go into that here very shortly. That's a factor. Do you have enough nesting habitat, which is different than breeding habitat? Do you have poult recruitment habitat, basically tall grass is what I leave up and down my driveway. It looks yucky, it looks crazy, but there's little baby poults that are living in that, and they're hidden from the overhead predation. They're hidden from even a bobcat or you know, a predator can't see them through there as well. Certainly can't, gives them a fighting chance to get away and to run and to fly. It takes them a week or 10 days before they actually can fly, the newly hatched poults. So that is, you know, just very one quick example of poult rearing habitat. That can be a limiting factor. These are all things that you can change. So there's lots of limiting factors that we've identified and that we try to address to raise our turkeys. But one of those limiting factors may or may not be predation. And that is where trapping and trappers can help. Even if you're not a turkey hunter, this may be a place that you're able to gain access to people that are turkey hunters to get on their property in the fall and the winter and, you know, months before turkey season and actually take care of some of these predators. Now, back to what I started to say, let's just talk about what animals eat turkeys. What animals can hurt us on the turkeys? I think the number one enemy for a turkey, many people already are nodding their head and say, yep, a raccoon. He's important. We're going to talk about a raccoon. To me, he's not enemy number one. In my mind's eye, a bobcat will eat baby poults. A bobcat will eat a grown tom. We call them gobblers here. A bobcat will eat a grown hen. A bobcat will eat a nesting hen. Not so much the eggs. I guess a bobcat would eat the eggs if he had opportunity to, but a bobcat is just bad news. And a bobcat, he's patient. He can lay in wait for them. He can pattern them. That's just the way a bobcat works. I mean, you know, very, very similar to house cats. They're still a cat, and they're you know, they're hunters. They're very, very proficient at what they do. So that bobcat, in my opinion, is just bad news on a turkey. And so he is the number one predator, I think, for a wild turkey. Here's the cool part. It's pretty easy to knock a significant dent in a bobcat population if your state laws will allow you. I understand there's still some places that you can't even trap bobcats, which is a shame, but make sure you follow your state laws. But like in lots of other places, especially in the South, I happen to live in Mississippi, we have no limit on bobcats during trapping season. We can catch as many as we want. And you can severely, if your goal is to raise wild turkeys, then, and you have lots of predators, my number one target is going to be the bobcats, because the bobcat is about the only critter that can kill a turkey year round. We'll go into coyotes. We might as well talk about coyotes and turkey predation right now. It's my opinion that I'm sorry, it's thundering out here. Hopefully it's not messing this audio up too much, but we got a thunderstorm coming through. It's my opinion that a coyote is not a huge threat. Do they eat some turkeys? Yes, there's no doubt. They will occasionally catch one. A turkey is pretty slick itself. They're pretty fast. They can get in the air. They can fly. I think probably as many turkeys get eaten by a coyote, or as many times a coyote has maybe a turkey's tail feather in its mouth, but not the turkey. They can be a problem, but I don't think they're nearly as big of a problem as when you compare predation from a bobcat to predation from a coyote on a wild turkey. I think that I honestly think that the bobcat is much, much more severe of a problem and much more of a threat to your turkey populations than the cat, you know, than I think the bobcat's worse than a coyote. I may have said that backwards, but I absolutely believe that comparing the two, the bobcat's worse. Then you go into the nest predators, and this is where you can wipe out an entire spring's of production. And nest predators, the lion's share of that is raccoons. Also involved in that same exact thing, and I'm going to circle back around here. I told you I can probably get scatterbrained. A fox, gray or red fox, can go right there in that coyote bobcat thing. They're probably, a fox is probably more of a predator on nesting hens than even the coyote or the, or probably in, his fit is in between the coyote and the bobcat. As far as, you know, my experiences and what I've seen, he gets his share for sure. And he's pretty nimble, but you know, I don't know how many they get in grown turkeys in the fall or winter. I think they're probably more. So some of these can actually cross between nest predators and adult predators all at the same time. But a fox is certainly in that category, as well as a number of different things could be. Snakes actually will eat eggs a lot, even possibly the small poults. Snakes can be a predator of turkeys. Almost everything's against a turkey. I mean, it really is. But before I get off too much on a tangent, let's go into the nest predators themselves and just talk about them. In the nest predators, besides the crazy stuff like snakes, and that snakes do eat a lot of eggs, you have raccoons for sure. You have possums for sure. You have skunks for sure. And then you have your other things that can eat eggs. I mean, crows can if they find the nest, they can attack on different things. But as trappers primarily trap what we fur bears, you know, I mean, what we trap. So we kind of almost discount what we lose to snakes and what we lose to crows or whatever else, you know, we lose turkey nests to. So now let's just talk about just the nest predators, and we're going to kind of boil that down to the big three, which are raccoons, possums, and skunks. All three are pretty easy to catch. Even I am a proficient possum trapper. I'm not a real good trapper by anything, but I can catch a possum, I promise you. Possums are easy to catch. Same with raccoons. This is not going to be a show about raccoon trapping. And I'm not going to go into really, really deep detailed methods, but certainly DPs are a great way to blanket an area. Are you going to, you know, can you help a turkey population? Absolutely, because every coon that you take out of that population is one less coon that's going to raid a nest. But what I really would like to focus on is more the timing. The nest predators, when I'm talking about the big three nest predators, coons, possums, and skunks, the only time that they really raid nests and the only time that they really damage turkeys' nests is during the spring when the turkeys are nesting. So a little bit about the biology of a turkey. You know, in the spring of the year, the gobblers start gobbling, they breed the hens, and at a certain period of time, the hens go and they nest. They'll start laying a nest, an individual egg, per day typically, and until they have 12 to 15 eggs, it just depends on that particular hen, and then they start the incubation period. So those eggs are laying there for 2 weeks plus sometimes as the nest is being laid, and those eggs are very, very subject to predators there. The hen is not sitting on that nest during those first, you know, 2 weeks. She's out doing hen stuff, and she's coming back to the nest and laying those one egg per day for ever how many eggs she lays. And then she starts the incubation process. That is when she starts sitting on the nest, and she stays on it 24/7, save just short breaks for food and water throughout the day, and she sits on it for 28 days and as the eggs are incubating. So now, if you really want to break this down and look at it, we've got 28 days and another 14, we got in excess of a month that those eggs are laying on the ground before they're hatching. And during that month is when it's so critical and so crucial to being the risk of having a predator raid that nest. So when do you trap? You trap when you can trap. That's when you can trap. You know, Mississippi, for instance, they have rules on the books, laws, very, very few. We got very liberal trapping laws. We actually have measures by which we can take a raccoon legally 8 months out of the year. We cannot legally take a raccoon during turkey season, and their reasoning for that is that's also the same time that the raccoons have den trees full of kit coons. So we're trying to, the biologists are trying to manage all species. They're not just concerned about turkeys. They're concerned about, you know, raccoon populations because that's healthy as well and different things. It's kind of a shame that we got to pick one or the other. We can't manage everything. But right now we're talking about protecting turkeys and growing turkey populations and how trapping fits into there. So what I do, we can trap through the end of February here. And I make a big push, usually the last week or two. You've heard me talk on here a lot before. I'm a coyote guy. That's what I love to do. But I usually, on the land that I own and I intensively manage for wild turkeys, I'll make a big push to just blanket my raccoons for the last 10 days, 2 weeks of trapping season. I will literally every year make a big push for that. Hit my creeks, I hit my spring heads, I hit my ridge tops for the big boar coon. I think they're probably more aggressive because they're out on the prowl more than necessarily sow coon are. You really don't have that big of a concern in the springtime for kits because they're still babies at that time. They're still in the den tree with mom. But the big boar coon, I think, are the ones that are on the prowl the most of the time. And that's what I try to target all of them though. And I try to hit them hard. With the same time, my raccoon trapping looks identical to possum trapping, to skunk trapping, to a mini degree. Skunks are a little bit different because they have a little bit different different terrain. We don't have a big skunk problem here. I do catch a few occasionally, but all of that is certainly not for the fur market right now. Many of you know what a raccoon hide is worth, especially in the deep south where they're not furred up. Like you guys up north have great fur. We do not here. You know, we're a dollar coon right now in this market. It's where traditionally the last couple of years. And so I'm doing it for my turkeys. That's what I'm doing. I'll hit them pretty hard. But those are the areas I'm focused on. I want to, you know, I'm just like any other chaplain. I'm looking for sign. I'm looking for where I can be the most efficient and knock out the most, the most nest predators in the shortest and the most efficient time. One thing I will caution you on trapping around your turkeys, and I am absolutely in love with a turkey, and that's the reason that I make this big push each year for these nest predators. Steel traps absolutely have their place, but you've got to be careful if you also have a high population. I'm telling you from experience, I bust my tail to try to protect the turkeys, and when I come back and I catch a hen and break her leg in a trap, and it's gonna happen if you're not really, really careful. It's gonna happen anyway. If you're not extremely careful, there's some things that you can do. You know, typically the turkey is not gonna typically want to walk through the thicket. You know, so sometimes and we're using baits and lures, and so sometimes one little tricks I'll do, I will back my setup, and I'll put some trailing scent. Usually I just use fish oil in a mustard bottle, the kind you got, ketchup bottle or whatever, mine are clear. You pop the little top off with your thumb and it's kind of plastic, but it's cushiony. You squirt a trail there. And, you know, those raccoons and possums will follow that. They absolutely will. And then if I'm going to be setting steel traps, foothold traps, many times, I'll have a trailing scent and I'll try to get it out of where, you know, my turkeys typically like to be. In other words, if I'm on the edge of a field, that trap's going to be backed up and there may be an edge of a thicket somewhere. And I may give them a piece of bait or something out there to kind of, you know, and then have it trailing scent to get them come on in there with that fish oil or whatever I happen to be doing. If I'm baiting with cat food or some kind of DP bait or something like that, DPs are not as much of an issue. You're not hardly going to catch. I've never heard or seen of anybody catching a turkey in a dog proof. So those, absolutely, if I'm in an area that I can't, I'm going to switch to dog proofs. The other thing are the boxes, the body grip boxes. I use those a whole lot because a turkey has no business going in that box after, you know, feathers. That's not what they eat. They're eating insects and grain and different things out in the, you know, acorns and different things out in the field, but they're not going after feathers like I attract them. And well, that also doubles because that's also a great tool for bobcats, predator number one. Now that's actually, I was going to cover the steel traps around turkeys when I started talking about the, you know, catching the adult predators, the bobcats, fox and coyotes, but at any rate, we're here now. So anything besides the coyote, even including the fox, those boxes, the cubby boxes, and you can construct them many different ways. You don't even have to have a box. You can construct a cubby with just natural surroundings. I mean, I've even done it, guard the front of it, have a very, very small opening, guard the front, but literally a briar thicket, you know, and you got to have gloves on, and preferably you do this in wintertime where you're not getting stuck by briars where you got a coat on or something, but it all scratched up. But you can actually make a cubby up in a briar thicket and guard that with, you can even do that with a foothold trap, because now you've got the critter going somewhere the turkey's not going to go. So just a little bit of thought process in there, because it will break your heart, or at least it breaks my heart when I'm trapping for my turkeys and I catch a turkey. And I've done that probably half a dozen times at least. And it's a kind of a bad feeling when it happens. I mean, you're kind of counterproductive in what you were trying to do. So just some things to think about there. I use, if I don't have any other choice and I'm really in nest predator mode, I'll go heavy on DPs. You're not going to pick up as many skunks with that. I don't know that I've ever actually even caught a skunk in a DP. I'm sure somebody has, but they're very, very effective on possums and also on your raccoons. So a very, very deadly tool on them. Like the boxes too. Those two are what I use when I'm out in the open. And then, you know, when I'm forced to set steel foothold traps, I typically will, you know, either do the trailing scent or try to get out of the habitat that's, it may be adjacent, it may be very, very close, but try to get out of where I think my turkeys are going to be walking. Now, I want to transition a little bit into trapping for the adult turkey predators. Now I'm talking about the fox and the bobcat and the, we've already touched a little bit on it, and the coyotes. So if you'll observe a population of turkeys over a 12-month period of time, then you will start to see that they have different distinct patterns. And certain time in their life cycle, they like certain habitats. Certain times throughout the year, they like other habitats. So where my farm is that I'm sitting on right now that has a really decent population of turkeys, they're here most of the year, but there's some times, typically late winter, for whatever reason, the turkeys just kind of migrate away from here for a month or two, and then usually right before the spring, they filter right back in. My place, I've owned it for 6 years, and it was a 17-year-old cutover when I bought it, so that's 23-year cutover now, I think. And so it's thick. It's still thick. It's opening up year after year after year. The forest is opening up, the whole landscape, everything. I've opened up a lot of the fields and different things and pasture ground and kind of reclaimed some of that. But so it's just the habitat. And I think because my place is still somewhat thick, it really encourages nesting habitat. And I think that's somewhat responsible for why the turkeys kind of come and go and you know, understand a little bit about what they do and their behavior. So that's my window when the turkeys are kind of migrate away from here just a little bit. They're not far. They're on the neighbor's property or the neighbor's property. But they, you know, that's more open woods, more big timber, open stuff. And that's just kind of what they do. As the poults mature, now they're 8, 9, 10 months old at this time. And so that's when I have less turkeys here. Does it mean I'll never see one walking across the place? No, we see them occasionally, but instead of seeing, you know, 15, 20 a day, we're seeing one every other day. That's when I'm coming in, and that's when I'm hitting my adult predators hard, because I feel like I can get away with setting my foothold traps, in traditional method. Now, one thing I would advise you against doing, if you're trapping around turkeys and you love turkeys and you're trapping to protect your turkeys, I get away from my dirt holes. Turkeys love fresh dirt. No lure, no bait, no anything, just fresh dirt. A turkey's gonna come scratching it. They're just about gonna do it. Disc up field, you're begging turkeys to come. They grow up in that stuff. They find worms, they find insects. There's all kinds of different things that they do, and they scratch around in that stuff. And so they're just very, very attracted to any kind of loose dirt. A lot of times in our coyote trapping, even bobcat or fox trapping, what's a go-to for a lot of guys is a dirt hole, big old flashy dirt hole. They're effective. They catch fur. They absolutely do. They catch predators of turkeys. They absolutely do. But they also, you're inviting your turkeys to come to your sets. So I will couple the times when I have less turkeys on the place. I'm just observing this. You know, it just takes a little time in the field to figure out. Yeah, our cameras, we got game cameras now. That's a great tool for that. I'll try to time both when I don't have as many turkeys, and also I go almost exclusively flat sets. Even for fox, I will go, you know, the only difference and we do have quite a few gray fox here. The only difference I'll do, it looks real similar to coat set. I just bring my trap way up closer to my lure, my bait. I'm not going to go into all, everybody knows what a flat set is. I love that three rock set, that we got shows on that. There's a number of them. I use something natural. Something else I do, especially while we were talking about fox, just popped in my head. Old logs are not even big logs. I mean, I've got some I carry with me all the time. I half bury them. They're only about a foot or 18 inches long, and they've had lots of lure smeared on them. I mean, you can pick them up. They stay in my little trapping truck all the time, and you can pick them up and smell lure on them for years. I mean, they're just handy. I will half bury those, literally pound them in with my hammer, blend those right back in, and I'll set. But they're big enough that you can even do this like with a fallen log. This is a better example. With an old rotten fallen log, you can stick some lure bait back up in there. That turkey, if there is one there, still you're blending it all back in, he's not likely to walk right up against the log. Where a fox is, a fox is going to go right up there. They're going to put their nose on your, typically their idea is for them to put their nose on your bait and your lure, and they're going to be right up close. Well, you know, just imagine a turkey walking up there, he's going to stay back. So foxes are a little easier, and you can easier to get away with to try to catch a fox to protect your turkeys than is, say, a coyote. Because, you know, I bring my sets way out. You heard that whole 10 and 2 rule and all this. I'm more like a 18. I put the trap where I think the trap needs to go for a coyote, and I may be some guys that taking instruction from me, they're like, for real? You get this that far away? Yeah, because that's where I think the coyote's going to put his foot. You know, and it's just a number of different reasons for that. This is not a show about coyote trapping either, but typically your traps pull back further away, and now you're in danger zone for a turkey. But when you go to flat sets and you really blend them back in, then you're, I think you decrease your odds of catching a turkey. Certainly you don't have that fresh dirt attractant. The more you can get away with putting something there to have it out of the typical walking zone, I guess, I don't know the right words, of a turkey where a turkey would typically travel, the better off that you're going to be. So now we've talked about things that eat adult turkeys. And when I say adult turkeys, I've got some poults in my early poults right now. They're pheasant size. I've also yesterday evening, actually it may have been two evenings ago, I've got some little bitty canary size turkey just hatched, day or two old too. So any particular property through any given spring is going to have a different age group, I guess. They don't all hatch at the same time, is what I'm trying to say. Last year, actually, we had one clutch, the last clutch that I was aware of, they didn't hatch until on up the first week of August. That hen, I'm sure, got raided her nest. She repeated at least once, probably a couple of times. A lot of times your jennies, which are your one-year-old female turkeys, immature or adolescent hens, they can nest, but a lot of times they are, just because of the biological maturity, they're a little bit later in the season doing it. I think sometimes that is responsible for that, and also the predation hens lose their nest. They will reattempt 2 to 3 times, if the weather and the conditions will allow for them to re-nest. And, you know, so you've got a big wide window there. You can't just say, I got to protect them for the month of May or half of May and the first half of June. There's no real set thing there, because turkeys can hatch nests and hatch poults any time of the year. So I just kind of wanted to point that out. And so the time to trap is the time that you can trap. You just kind of got to play the odds in your favor. Obviously, if you clean up a nuisance population of raccoons, it's going to take them a little while to revamp. Are you going to fill in that void? You absolutely are. If you take every bobcat off of property, bobcats are probably the one that you can do the most good with, because if you think about it, when the bobcats, when their kittens are born, it's typically 2 to 3. If you're knocking out 4, 5, 6 cats a year on a property, you can knock a big dent in them. Is there a chance that other cats will filter back in and assume that void? Absolutely. Very, very likely. It's going to happen sometime or another, but it takes longer. If you go into a small property like mine, a 330-acre property, and you take out, I don't know that it's humanly possible, but if you could take out every single raccoon on there, that's good for a short amount of time, but before long, other raccoons are going to filter right back in there. If you take every possum, every skunk out, sooner or later they're going to filter back in. But what you take out, you're doing yourself a whole lot of good from your nest predators. I try to time that. Anytime is great, so long as it's legal and in season then. But I try to take out as many as I can, and I just devote some time to that for a week or two or three during the season. And if I see, obviously all parts of the country, I assume, raccoon population cycle as well. I mean, I don't know if this was actually true or not. What I was always led to believe for years ago was we had a 7-year cycle in distemper, and it automatically would knock out a big dent in raccoon populations, as well as other type of critter populations when that distemper rolled through. I don't know if that's truly 7-year cycle or not, but I know there's certain years that we got a lot more reckonings than we do other years. And I think everybody understands what I'm saying there. And so the years that we have a lot more and I'm trying to grow my turkey population, those are the years I may nest predator trap 3 or 4 weeks instead of my typical 10 days, 14 days. So I kind of time that based on what I'm seeing as far as populations of critters. And so I want to go a little bit different direction right now, I think. And let's just kind of talk about the average trapper that doesn't really care much about turkeys. He's not a turkey hunter. This is perfectly fine. Nothing wrong with that. But understanding these principles can really help you get on other properties that are owned by turkey hunters. We could talk about the same thing and the same principles will apply to fawn management for whitetail deer or different species that other people enjoy. There's a lot of deer hunters out there, guys. A whole lot of deer hunters. Not nearly as many trappers, but I think there's studies that show 70% of our fawns are lost to coyotes. If you know coyotes and you know deer hunters, you should not have any issues whatsoever gaining access to property to trap. You know, if you know how to catch nest predators and you know how to catch turkey adult predators, then and you know turkey hunters, you shouldn't have gaining access, gaining permission to trap should not be, you've got a leg up. You've literally got something that you can focus on, and that in and of itself will gain you a lot of ground and a lot of places that you can trap. So just kind of wanted to circle back around and let that be a tool to learn from and to springboard off of as you're knocking on doors and gaining permissions. Which, by the way, right around the corner is the time to be doing that. You don't want to most good trappers I know plan this out ahead of time, get their land, lined up. They're a lot of times through the summer and late summer and early fall is when they're gaining their permissions, and then they're making their plans and they're making all the preparations for the trap lines that they're typically going to be running. So having said all that, I'm going to go ahead and start to close this show up right now. I've got a couple of things going on, and I just got a message that I need to run here in just a very short few minutes, run and take care of something else. So I'm going to close this. I knew this may be a little bit shorter. Hopefully it was entertaining enough, and hopefully you learned something, about trapping for turkeys and to protect them. I want to close back up, and at the very first of the show, I kind of started talking about, I'll say this, there's a lot of concern right now all across the United States, specifically with turkeys, that populations are on the decline. Trapping certainly, when predation is the most limiting factor, trapping absolutely unequivocally can help. But trapping is one of many things. Overall habitat that can be broken down, like we've already talked about, from wintertime habitat, summertime habitat, nesting habitat, brood rearing habitat. It's a lot of different ways. Sometimes that's the most limiting factors. And if you're, now I'm taking my hat off, my turkey hunting hat off, and I'm putting my trapping hat off, and I'm putting my turkey management hat on right now. Sometimes you need to address those. And now I'm talking about, what does it take to really raise turkeys? Well, here's my big point. Trapping is not everything. The next thing is, food sources for turkeys. Do they have, I plant summertime, fall, wintertime food plots for turkeys. We can't harvest turkeys then. I'm trying to grow them. I'm trying to make sure they have plenty of nutrition and plenty to eat at all times that they need them, and address the concerns of turkeys. Sometimes that's the most limiting factor. Manipulating the forest and the forest floor, sometimes that's the most limiting factor that you have. Burning, prescribed burns, that sometimes you manipulate that forest floor with fire sometimes. So sometimes that can be, that's actually my most limiting factor now. I'm pretty much on top of my predation. It's a managed thing. I'll never win on turkey predators. It's going to be a work in progress all the time. But a turkey hen has a much better chance when she nests here than she does when she nests on a place that's never seen a trapper, that has raccoons and possums and skunks rampant and a huge population of bobcats, she's got a better opportunity at successfully raising poults here where I manage that. So that's no longer my most limiting factor. Where I need to focus on now is, you know, is cleaning up some of these hollows. I'm actually burning every third one every 3 years. So that's what my plan is right now. So it's always a limiting factor. I mean, there's big pushes across the country. I do think that there's a lot of reasons behind the decline, and you'll hear people say, like anything, they'll make it political. It's a blame game. It's your state agency's fault. It's the NWTS fault. It's whatever's fault. It's typically, if you want turkeys, you can raise turkeys. If you halfway have the habitat and you have a population that you, even a small one, you can start with, you can grow your turkeys. You're not going to do it from the couch watching Oprah. You're going to have to get out there. You're going to have to set the steel. You're going to have to manipulate the landscape. You're going to have to do some things to do, and not all of them are cheap, but if you want them bad enough, you can have them. And that's a life lesson, really. That applies to a lot of different things. But all I'm saying is with the trapping, it's just one small thing. It is one of the potential limiting factors, but it can absolutely be controlled. It can help us as trappers not only to manage turkeys, but also to gain access to other fur bearers too. You know, you knock on the door of a guy like me that loves to turkey hunt, but I happen to trap. Don't knock on my door. I'm going to do my own trapping. But somebody that doesn't trap, but you know he loves to turkey hunt, you can gain access there, and it opens it up to other fur bearer species as well. All right, guys, so I'm going to close with that. It's a little bit shorter show than usual, but I do appreciate very, very much you hanging in with me and talking to me about turkeys and trapping. Those are my two favorite things in the world to do is to hunt turkeys and to trap. And so this is a really, really fun show. Hopefully I didn't bore you too long, but I do appreciate it. Again, thank you guys for listening to this. Without the listeners, there'd be no need to sit here and do these podcasts. I absolutely love my time hanging out with you guys. It's been a blast. Thank you so much. And until next time I get a chance to hang out with you again, I'll be looking forward to that. And we certainly do appreciate it. And this will be Chip signing out for Trapper Radio.